Good morning and welcome to Backyard and Beyond. This morning we're visiting with Leo Landis, and I hope folks remember hearing him last Friday when Jim visited with Leo. And welcome to Atlantic, Leo.
It's wonderful to be here, LaVon.
Great. And you just gave us a wonderful summary of a lot of things that went on World War One, and a lot of information about Atlantic and Exira and Audubon and Shelby County, and brought it really kind of home to us. But that's partly what this exhibit, the Great War exhibit you have at the Historical Museum in Des Moines, that's really what that's about.
Whenever we do an exhibit at the State Historical Museum, we try to tell stories from across the state. And when I get a chance to come out to communities, then I really do try to get into some of the local stories as well that I didn't have a chance to tell in the exhibit, because you can't tell every story, as all museum folks know.
That's true. Now, if somebody came to the museum and said, I'd like to know more about this person that was in World War One, is there a way to look up information?
Our research center, which is open from 9 to 4:30 Wednesday through Saturday, is the best place to do that work. We have over 2,500 photographs of Iowans who died in service, both women and men, primarily men. And so that's a set of materials we have. We also have some other World War I materials in Des Moines, but there's also our Iowa City Research Center. So anytime you're looking at a topic, for state records, check Des Moines, and special collections, you can check Des Moines, but other special collections, check Iowa City too.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you are continuing to gather information, gather pictures and so on from World War One, and you have a project going on right now. Let's talk about that.
That's our Iowa World War One Honor Roll project. And in the 1920s, the curator at the time and of the historical department, Edgar Harlan, worked across the state to try to collect photographs of every Iowan who died in service. That number that's usually used is 3,576. We have about 2,600 of those photographs. There may be some out there that we don't know about. So we've got a list on the Iowa Honor Roll Project by county and just alphabetically that your listeners can check by going to iowaculture.gov.
And we have to talk a little bit about an interesting story, because I went right away to Cass County and I said, there's one photo missing. That's Paul Fackler. And I knew the name, never knew the man, but I knew the name, going, well, we surely can find a picture of Paul. Do we need to do that?
You don't need to do that. That was the fun story that I found out in my last research as I was getting ready for the talk, is what the historical department typically did was to look at the casualty lists that were printed in the newspapers. And so in early 1919, it was published that Paul Fackler, his wife had received a telegram saying he had been killed in France, and it called him Private Paul Fackler, and that was one of the things that raised a flag for her, but said he had died in October. Well, she knew that that wasn't quite right, because she had been receiving letters from him from November to December, and the announcement in the paper was in January, and so the Atlantic paper had even run a story saying, Paul Fackler is not dead. And that's one that we think we have Cass County. That's taken care of.
Yeah, 100%. That's really great. But I'm thinking about Mrs. Fackler when she first got that telegram, even knowing he was alive. That had to be a great shock.
I can't even imagine what it would be like to have that Department of War telegram showing up saying, your husband's killed, and knowing in your mind that can't be the case, because you'd been receiving letters from him from November and December.
Amazing. But do go on, no matter where you live in Iowa, you might want to go on that list, because if you don't have somebody that you know in your county, you may know somebody in another county, because people came from all over Iowa, obviously.
That's right. And I know your listeners are from different counties in southwest Iowa, so you can look for Page County or Mills County or Shelby or Audubon, and that'll give you a chance just to look county by county, Adair County, and just see who we don't have, and we'd love to have the help.
Yes. And very, very interesting to take a look at, and it's really, really easy to do. So you told a number of interesting stories about the area. I think one of the things that I didn't realize till I started looking at this a little bit was all of the discrimination against folks from other countries, especially Germany, but some other countries too, that really was a very strong feeling, and lots of kind of side effects from that.
That's right. It was especially prominent and a challenge for people in Audubon and Shelby and counties where there was a large Danish population. The Governor Harding, William Harding at the time, had in May of 1918 issued a proclamation saying that all public conversations and religious and educational activities that happened in public had to be conducted in English. And so the Danes, who were no fans of the Germans, were not happy that they were being grouped together. So people from prominent people from Kimbolton were writing letters saying, don't group us in. You're doing damage to us as a people. We can't raise the Red Cross and the Liberty loan funds that you want us to raise because you're saying we can't preach in our native language, Danish, and we're just as patriotic and supportive of the war as anybody.
And that kind of went on for a while. Now, the armistice, if I think this is right, was on November 11th, 1918. But that sort of feelings and thoughts and so about the war and the soldiers coming home, that lasted quite a while after that.
It certainly did, and people were concerned that we'd been drawn into this international conflict because of warlike Germans and that we needed to keep monitoring that activity. So even into early 1920, there were letter writers from Cass County and other counties saying, there are people speaking German. Is your proclamation still in effect, Governor Harding? It had been repealed in late 1918, so it wasn't in effect, but there were still Iowans who were wishing it was.
And when was the date of about the last service people who came home from World War I?
Most Iowans were back by the end of May 1919. So many communities had returning events either mid to early May or around Decoration Day or what we think of as Memorial Day or the 4th of July of 1919. There were a lot of community celebrations as well.
So that was quite a while, actually. I mean, if you were a family of one of those servicemen, that seemed to be a long time, I'm sure. Now, of course, most of the people on the list who served and who also were killed in that war are men, but there were some women and even some sort of local ones.
That's right. There was Rose Buman, who was from Tennant area, and she had a German last name, but she was really from the Schleswig-Holstein area, so she was more Danish-like than she was German. And she had been stationed at Camp Pike as a nurse during the flu pandemic of September and October of 1918. In October, she contracts the flu, and so she's one of those Americans of the hundreds of thousands who die from the flu. She dies from the flu. There's a woman, Kathleen Kennebec, from Carroll County. I know of a woman from Fort Madison and a handful of others from across the state who died.
And again, thinking back to that time, think about those young women and how adventuresome they were to volunteer. I mean, to go to France and do that work, I can't hardly imagine how somebody could do that.
Especially if you had been a young woman, even growing up in a more urban community in Iowa, whether it be a town like Davenport or a rural community, as we said, like Rose Buman from Tennant. But a good example is a woman named Grace Van Evra, who is from Scott County. She goes over and serves overseas and experiences the war, but knows then that she has the confidence, apparently, to come back and be a public health official in Wapello County, so in a rural community for the largest part of her life. So it was a real chance for women to get a chance to do something different with their lives and say, I can have a larger experience than just being a wife.
And that was sort of the time when women were working on women's suffrage, that were kind of stepping out beyond what perhaps the traditional expectations were.
Exactly right. We think of that during World War II, but World War I gave women an opportunity to take leadership in organizations like the Red Cross that were nationally significant. Not that that didn't happen before the war, but there were many more opportunities to take a leadership role in your community and improve your value to the community. So,
and also working in some plants to put together machinery and so on. I mean, we always think of Rosie the Riveter in World War II, but there were some predecessors to her.
Exactly. Up in Waterloo at the Waterloo Gasoline Engine Company, women were put into foundry work, which would be outside of their normal sphere. But because men had been called up, they needed some extra hands. And so some stalwart women. Women were also then working on harvesting as well. So that was something where women would be out in the field a little bit more than they might have normally been. So in rural communities, you had men and women who would pick corn when it was needed.
Very good. Lots and lots of stories. And, of course, you were just highly involved with this wonderful exhibit at the Historical Museum in Des Moines. And I just recommend people, I just go in and put Historical Museum Iowa or something like that, and up comes your website with wonderful photos and stories about all the things that are there at the museum.
Right, and if your listeners don't have internet access, we're at 600 East Locust. We are just down the hill, just to the west of the State Capitol building. There's a free parking ramp on the north side of the building on Grand, and we're open 9 to 4:30 Monday through Saturday. We're closed on Sundays.
Thank you very much, Leo, for visiting with us and coming to Atlantic. And just remember, we have that wonderful resource at Des Moines for the Iowa Historical Museum.